May God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. Can it be that Easter was just a week ago? It feels kind of like it happened months ago. Maybe that's because, at least, you know, for someone like me, there's such a buildup, such a preparation. You know, kind of put all of your energy, just focus on Holy Week to get ready. And true for ministers, true for, you know, I'm sure the folks in our music program as well. By the way, I just want to say again what marvelous music we had at both of our Easter services last week. But all this work, and then it's over. And for most of us, it's back to business as usual. Work, family, household chores, daily responsibilities. Oh, good, there's still a presidential campaign going on. Taxes are due. And oh, yes, there's something I'm preparing for, some big change coming up in my life and in the life of this church. It's hard to sustain the enthusiasm and hope of Easter once it's over and the day-to-day world begins to intrude upon us once again. But if it's any comfort, this isn't only our issue. It was also an issue for the early church, an issue that the writer of the Gospel of John seemingly was quite well aware of. Now, most scholars believe that the Gospel of John is probably our last gospel, the latest gospel, written pretty close to the end of the first century. Not many eyewitnesses were left then. Jesus had been gone for a long time. There had been no second coming. Says one New Testament scholar, John's problem, which is a continuing problem for the church, was how to encourage people in the faith when Jesus was no longer around to be seen or touched. And the story of Thomas gave him a way to do that. By detailing the reluctant disciples' doubt, John took the words right out of our mouths and put them into Thomas's mouth, so that each of us, in reading that story, has the opportunity to think about how we do or do not come to faith. Thomas, doubting Thomas, has received a lot of negative press over the years. I can't tell you how many sermons have been preached about his lack of faith, his demand for certainty. One hears the phrase doubting Thomas so often, you kind of begin to think that doubting was his first name. But I wonder if perhaps we shouldn't cut Thomas just a little slack here. Is he really all that different from us? I recall the story of a little girl who had a nightmare and cried out. Her mother came into her and attempted to comfort her by saying, "You know, don't be afraid, dear. You know that no matter what, God will be with you." To which the girl replied, "I know that, Mommy. But tonight, I want somebody with skin on." Isn't that exactly what Thomas wanted when it came to his faith? Something, someone with a little skin on that he could see and touch, some verifiable evidence. In all honesty, I wouldn't mind a little bit of that evidence myself. Just a couple weeks ago now, I gave my faith journey as part of our Tuesday night Lenten series. And there were some questions, and one of the questions was something like this: was there a moment, kind of a defining moment for you, you know, when your faith was clear, your direction, your ministry, what you wanted to do was absolutely clear? And I had to answer, in all honesty, that no. There really hasn't been that light shining like Paul that knocked me off my horse. No, there really hasn't been that one defining moment. I think my faith has been more evolutionary. Fits and starts, endings and beginnings. Yes, there have been moments of intense knowing, but also equally, you could say, moments of intense confusion and doubting. Well, when we were done, one of our church members came up to me, longtime church member, probably been coming to church here maybe 40 years or more, and thanked me for my faith journey. She said, after all these years and all her faithfulness to the church, she still has questions and concerns and wishes she had more certainty and fewer doubts. And she said it was helpful to her, for her to hear me say that I'm on that very same journey. And I wonder, could she be the only one in this church that feels that way? Okay. At least some of the time? I suspect not. I recall a few years back when Mother Teresa created quite a stir when she shared her own dark night of the soul. Times, she said, when she wondered, even doubted, if God was really there at all. Mother Teresa, for heaven's sakes! A model of Christian faith and selfless service, sharing her own deepest doubts. Henry Nouwen, great saint of the 20th century church, whose writings continue to inspire thousands of Christians and non-Christians everywhere. He once said, somehow I have to trust that God is at work in me. Somehow I'm going to have to trust. Somehow, even Henry Nouwen confessed to some lingering doubt. I recall a physicist, Richard Feynman, once saying, the dumbest people in the world are those who think they know. Speaking of faith and doubt, Frederick Buechner, of course, someone I admire and have quoted a lot over these years, he says, to speak of certainty and faith in the very same breath is a contradiction and is to miss the whole point of the biblical story. There, men and women of the Spirit live by faith, not by certainty. They never are fully free of doubt, but have enough faith to live with it. If you don't have doubts, you're either kidding yourself or you're asleep. Doubts are the ants in the pants of faith. They keep it alive and moving. They keep us asking, keep us searching, keep us open. Imagine a congregation filled with people who are searching, who are alive, moving, and open, who are engaged with their faith, even as they ask questions and express doubts. You know, that could be a pretty exciting place to be. I could imagine someone spending quite a lot of time with a congregation like that. But getting back to Thomas, poet and Episcopalian lay leader Amy Hunter points out that when you think about it, Thomas was really no more of a doubter than the other disciples. We saw last week. Mary goes to the tomb. She meets angels, for heaven's sakes, and still she doubts. Peter and John go into the tomb, see it's empty, and they doubt. In the Gospel of Luke, the women come back to the disciples and say, "We've seen the Lord." The disciples remain locked in a room, apparently worried for their own safety. It isn't until Christ is actually among them that they believe. And all Thomas asked for, really, is the same experience they had. Says Hunter, Thomas wants proof and he wants Jesus. When Jesus appears again and Thomas is there, far from rebuking Thomas, Jesus offers to meet his conditions. The personal encounter makes Jesus' resurrection real to Thomas. He holds out for his own experience of Jesus, is the only one to make the confession, "My Lord and my God." Thomas dares to doubt, and Thomas dares to believe. And he's transformed. But still, we might wonder, you know, where are we in this story? Are we included, even though we're some 2,000 years removed from these events? How does the story become alive and real for us? How do we get some flesh on our faith? Reminded of a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. They're walking along, and Hobbes, the tiger, just out of the blue, says to Calvin, "Do you believe in God?" Calvin thinks about that one for a minute and then says, "Well, someone is out to get me." That could be one experience of the divine, I suppose. Or there's this, Tom Long, who's now a New Testament professor, but started in the church. He reflects back to his very first church, right out of seminary, a lot of energy, a lot of ideas, really want to be a success, let's make this happen. It was horrible. The church members really didn't like each other very much. There was bitterness, there was fighting. Nothing ever went well. They disagreed about everything. One night, the fight got so bad after a church council meeting, people came in and took the pews their parents had given and took them out of the church. True story. The sheriff was called to bring peace to the church. Long says he couldn't wait to get out of there. But then he says, a couple years later, while visiting at Emory Seminary in Atlanta, I ran into a young man who introduced himself and told me he was now working at that church. My heart went out to him immediately. Such a dear young man, and only 23. "They still remember you out there," he said. "Yeah," I said glumly, "I remember them too." "Remarkable bunch of people, don't you think?" "Remarkable?" Young man said, "Yes. Their ministry to the community has just been a wonder. That little church is now supporting in one way or another more than a dozen troubled families around the church. The free daycare center is going great. Not many interracial congregations in North Georgia." Says Long, "I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I had to ask him, what happened?" "I don't know," said the young minister. "One Sunday, things just sort of came together. It wasn't anything in particular. It's just that when the service was done and we were on our way out, we knew that Jesus loved us and had plans for us. Things just kind of took off after that." Concludes Long, "I tell you what I think happened. I think that church got intruded upon. I think someone greater than I knocked the lock off the door, kicked it open, and offered them peace, the Holy Spirit, and forgiveness, and now they are called church." Well, the disciples weren't exactly like that church, but they were a pretty pitiful group, cowering behind a locked door, scared to death, timidly hanging on to each other. Seemingly not a group, not a church with much of a future, except that when they gathered, Jesus pushed through that locked door, through their fear, their doubt, their grief, and stood among them. A word was spoken, "Peace be with you," a spirit given, and even the doubters dared to believe. To a church with nothing, Christ gave everything. Spirit, mission, peace, forgiveness, hope, and the sad little group went out and began to change a world. We have our doubts. As I've tried to say today, doubts aren't necessarily bad. But like Thomas, can we also dare to believe? Can we dare to believe that Jesus still comes among us? Still breaks through any locked door, even the locked doors of our hearts, still speaks his word of peace and hope, and still commissions us to take that word out into the world? Do we dare to be a part of Christ's risen life on earth? For faith is not merely believing that something is true, it's being prepared to act upon that belief and indeed to rely upon it. Or as Martin Luther said, faith is not simply believing that a ship exists. It's about stepping into the ship and entrusting ourselves to it. Not a bad description of church. For we have seen the Lord. In the flesh? Well, probably not. In the story? Possibly. In our shared life together? Absolutely.